Welcome to the Arendt Wheat Live number 5. And today we are looking at the new normal in 2022, evolution or revolution. Delighted to be joined today on our panel by Astrid Wagner, partner in the IP Communication and Technologies Practice, Philippe Schmidt, an employment law partner, Thierry Lesage, a tax partner, and Marc Mouton, the banking and financial services partner. Now, we were all told to expect a revolution in the way that we work, but for many, it's back to business as usual. Now, ladies and gentlemen of the panel, if you had to describe the current situation in one word, what would you say? Philippe Schmidt.
Hi, Jim. Well, indeed, when the crisis started back in spring 2020, there was an expectation that the work environment would shift very quickly. Everyone expected to be working from home or from a remote place for a long period of time. Office buildings would remain empty. But basically, when you took your car today to drive to work, you will notice that traffic jams are back again. And so that people are working in the premises again. There are, of course, some clients of ours who are still working in a remote setup, but most are back to the office.
So what's your one word, Philippe?
So I would say there is an evolution, clearly.
Fantastic. Thank you. I'm going to come to Thierry Lesage. Thierry, firstly, quick good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Thierry, what's your one word?
It's a significant evolution. It is clear that from a tax perspective, the tax rules governing cross-border home working are not new. But these rules have been suspended during the pandemic. And we have seen in the meantime, a general recourse to home working. So certain habits that have been taken by employers and employees during the pandemic will have to be revisited once the pandemic will be declared over.
Now, Marc Mouton, how about you? What's one word for us?
Well, my word would be acceleration, because I think what we have seen is that there has been an evolution, but in a very accelerated manner. We have seen things like remote working, electronic signatures, remote onboarding of clients. These are things that existed before the pandemic, but the kind of acceleration of the use of this kind of system has been dramatic, I think, with the pandemic.
Now, Astrid Wagner, what's your word?
If I have to choose one word, that would be digital. Operating the new model would not be possible without a digitalization.
Now, we were all actually told to expect a revolution in the way that we work, but for many, I suspect they would describe it as being back to business as usual. Now, over the last 2 years, many of us have had to radically adapt our own way of working, combining it with our personal lives, whilst at the same time producing the same value to our organisations, such as Société Générale that announced that their staff will be able to take 2 days of home working per week on an ongoing basis. PwC is planning the opening of satellite offices, including in the Mondorf Spa Centre, but not everyone is adopting this approach. Now, where people work is only one issue. How we work in a new digital environment has the potential to create new jobs and eliminate others. And with change comes new challenges. For example, is data any more at risk than it was in the office, for example? Now, the change in the way we work also could have an impact on our tax bills. And looking forward to hearing Thierry's advice on that. So, Philippe, I'm going to start with you. Is this really a revolution, or are you more in favor of this word evolution?
Well, you're right, Jim. I guess we are not facing the revolution some of us were expecting, but there is a very clear trend to much more flexible working model, both in terms of location where you work and also working hours. But of course, our mindset about how we work has been shaped over decades. So it's understandable that we cannot change this overnight and that flexibility has to come step by step. And we see that it is gaining momentum. But of course, there are some restrictions, and I guess that Thierry will tell us more about the tax restrictions, for example, that we are facing. So I would say the great rush towards more flexibility is taking place, but to a lesser extent than what we expected. And what we also see on the market is that a lot of employers are waiting to see what their competitors are doing. So nobody wants to be the first mover, and everyone is like looking, what is the neighbor doing?
So from your perspective, are you saying that we're back to business as usual?
Oh, no, don't get me wrong, Jim. I guess that things are changing. And from a human perspective and labor market perspective, we need more flexibility to attract and retain talents because the labor market is quite aggressive as we speak. A lot of traditional businesses have gone digital, so it's easier for them to work remotely in a more flexible fashion. But Luxembourg has a very unique workforce where a lot of employees are working or living abroad. And so that puts some restrictions to the flexibility that we are facing. But we see when speaking to our clients that some come up with very innovative solutions, like setting up satellite offices. Before the pandemic, there was a trend, I would say, to close down offices outside the main offices. But now we see the opposite trend, that some companies maintain those offices and use them to help employees living abroad to have shorter traveling time to work and to work from those satellite offices.
And what about the obligations of the employer? Have they been challenged, do you think, by this pandemic?
When you speak about obligations, you would first think about legal obligations. But I think that the first obligation is a human obligation, that you have to face the labor market today with increased flexibility, both in working hours and the place where employees work. We have the younger generation, which was claiming for much more flexibility even before the pandemic. But there are also, of course, regulatory and legal obligations, like from a tax and social security perspective. As an employer, you have to notify the social security authorities when employees are working remotely. And there is another obligation that they will face, and I guess we will talk about that a little bit later, which is the obligation to trust your employees when they are working in a more flexible model.
Goodness, trust. What a wonderful term that is. I don't know, Thierry, do you trust the people that are working for you remotely?
Sure, sure. It's essential. Without a deep relation of trust, it cannot work.
Astrid, how about the lawyers that are working in your team? Do you keep a watchful eye on what they're doing?
As Thierry said, trust is key. And I think that is also a decision which you have to take as an employer to trust your people. Otherwise, there are certain means to control, to monitor what employees are doing. But there are legal limitations to that, of course. But I think that trust is necessary also to motivate our workforce and to empower them. So we have to take that decision. It is as simple as that.
Philippe?
Well, Astrid is talking about trust and the obligation to trust employees, which is, of course, correct. But you also need to train, I guess, your managers who are supervising staff and employees so that they can adapt to this new way of working, because it's very different to overview the work of employees when you are in the premises. But when you have to do this remotely, you have to learn also to trust your team and the employees that you are overlooking.
Mm. Astrid?
Yeah, and maybe if I can also come back to what I said previously. So trust is fine, but certain companies, they are subject to professional secrecy, and they cannot just simply rely on trust. I mean, we as lawyers, it's the same for banks. And so on. So there, the element of trust is important in your relationship with your employers, but you still need to implement certain control measures in order to make sure that your data is adequately protected. And there, our clients often forget that there is also a data protection and employment law aspect to that, because there are specific information obligations if you implement surveillance measures. You have, for example, companies which the regulated entities which do have IT tools which are able to see from which area an employee is connecting to the servers, and whether that is during business hours or outside the business hours. But the ultimate goal behind is always to protect the IT systems, and to so if you see that an employer has worked until the end of the day from an area around Luxembourg, and 2 hours later that same employee will connect from another completely other corner of the world, obviously that is an attack by an outside attack on the system.
Goodness me. I mean, Mark, from your perspective, regulated entities must have had a nightmare trying to monitor this process.
Mm-hmm. Well, indeed, I would say in the regulated sector, we also have this wish to be more flexible and to base on trust. But as Astrid just mentioned, you need to organize this also properly. And for this, the regulator clearly expects you to set up a framework so that this new normal of remote working is being done in an orderly framework and that kind of the quality and the security of financial services is maintained. So there, I think Astrid already mentioned a number of technical measures to kind of monitor how this is being done, from where the activities are being done. And there is a whole number of measures in this area, and I will just name a few. So you have to properly document your approach in this respect in a policy. You need to make sure that at the various levels of management, the approach is being approved. We already discussed the use of specific technology so that the regulated entity keeps control of, for example, laptops and other devices that are being used, even to be able to remotely shut them off or wipe the data on them. The workers should not work from wherever they want, but as Astrid said, the idea is that they should work from a space where they can quickly return to the office where this is necessary. There are also risk assessments depending on what tasks. You know, not every person has the same role or an activity with the same sensitivity that can so easily be done remotely. So we see that there are kind of whole level of controls that are being set up so that this flexibility is nevertheless organized in an orderly manner.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it also seems we mentioned the magic word where in terms of whether our employees are potentially crossing borders before they come to work or not. I mean, Philippe, perhaps can I start with you? Do you think companies have really had to think through a strategy about how they manage their workforce and is a factor of that based on where their employees are coming from?
Yeah, so we see two different trends, I would say. On the one hand, you have companies who try to have a rather conservative approach, and so they would align on the tax constraints, both in terms of location and duration of remote working. And then you see a second kind of clients who are asking you to implement home working policies or distance working policies with a lot of flexibility also in terms of location. So there are some companies who say, I basically don't care where my employees are as long as they do the work, even if they do it on the beach or next to a pool, that's fine with me as long as work is done. But I guess that this also bears its load of risk from a tax perspective, as Thierry.
Sure. I mean, Thierry, my 10 staff want to go and work next to a pool in Spain. How is that going to fix with my tax impact?
Well, there are many tax angles to that question. And maybe let me first set the scene. I think it's important to understand where we are coming from and where we are heading to. Many double tax treaties in the world concluded between neighboring countries conclude so-called frontier workers provisions. And in these provisions, you have contracting states agreeing to tax employees, cross-border employees or frontier workers in their country of residence. And due to its very specific labor market situation, Luxembourg has never agreed to these provisions. And in a typical case, the Luxembourg employers using workforce in neighboring countries have always had these employees taxable exclusively in Luxembourg. But there is a but. Normally, it's only to the extent that the work is actually performed in Luxembourg. And in that respect, in the past, the tax authorities in the neighboring countries did not really care about the days of work not actually performed in Luxembourg. Over the years, this has become a growing concern. They have realized that there was easy money to collect and say, oh, you are spending some days working from home or working abroad, but not in Luxembourg. It means that I am entitled to collect some taxes. You are no longer taxable in Luxembourg, but in Germany, France, or Belgium. This situation has inevitably led to double taxation situations. And we have had negotiations made between the Lux tax authorities and their Belgian, French, and German counterparts in order to define some de minimis allowances. So defining a certain number of days per year, which were allowed to be worked outside of Luxembourg without becoming taxable in the country of residence. As we all know, during the pandemic, all cross-border workers were unable to commute generally. And so these basic tax rules have been suspended. And these cross-border workers have remained exclusively taxable in Luxembourg, despite the fact that they were working remotely from their home. Once the pandemic will be declared over and the current suspension of rules will be lifted, we will face a new tax reality. And so the habits that were taken by employees will have to be revisited in the light of these tax rules.
Philippe?
Well, we have a very similar arrangement when it comes to Social Security. There's a European regulation which says that basically you pay Social Security contributions in the country where you work. So a commuter living outside Luxembourg but working in Luxembourg in principle pays Social Security in Luxembourg, and the employer pays contributions as well in Luxembourg. However, if that employee decides to work from home, so outside Luxembourg, there's a threshold of 25% maximum time spent in the country of residence where the employee will not be subject to foreign Social Security. So in other words, if a commuter exceeds this 25% threshold, in that case, you will have to switch the employee from Luxembourg Social Security to foreign Social Security. And we are, of course, very lucky in Luxembourg to have a well-performing Social Security system where contributions are rather reasonable compared to other countries. So there is an additional restriction in addition to those mentioned by Thierry, that as an employer, you might face the risk that your employees will have to be registered outside Luxembourg with a social security system where contributions could be higher than in Luxembourg. So you might potentially facing additional costs by granting flexibility which goes beyond those thresholds Thierry mentioned before and the social security threshold.
So what you're saying is that as the pandemic comes to an end and as the rules become unfrozen, therefore, this factor will drive cross-border workers, whether they like it or not, back to working more in Luxembourg, Thierry. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, because the consequences are very significant for the employers. And so a strict monitoring and observance of these limits will have to be performed by employers.
And who's keeping tabs on all of this? Where our staff are workers? Who has the obligation to keep a record, for example, on where I'm working?
Well, it's gonna be the employer in the first instance.
But what we see in practice is that when employers put into place flexible working policies, they also ask the employees to track the number of days and the amount of time spent outside Luxembourg, so that you have, let's say, a double control, so that you have the tracking made by the employer and the employee. Hopefully, you have the same result. But basically, I would say, from my perspective, from the employment law perspective, it's like a shared obligation where both parties have the same interest, and you have to keep a very close eye on working from outside Luxembourg.
And very precisely, and because the risks, in case these thresholds are exceeded, the risk will be for the employer as well. So a strict monitoring by the employer as well is really key.
And Belgium, Germany, France, are they all equally eager to generate more tax revenue?
They could. they could, but the number of days that are allowed or that will be allowed going forward depend on the countries. So we will know for sure once the pandemic will be declared over, because the suspension for the time being is supposed to be lifted as from January 2022. For the moment, it's going to be a maximum of 19 days for Germany allowed to be worked outside of Luxembourg in order to exclusively remain taxable in Luxembourg. And for France and Belgium, this is to be confirmed, but it's supposed to be 34 days for both countries.
Right, so it's not an awful lot. I'm going to come back to geography a little bit later on. Now, I'd like to just refer to this rather tricky issue of digitalization that we know was already underway. But Astrid, from your perspective, what are the key areas of concern from a legal standpoint?
Mm-hmm. For me, the major point of concern is cybersecurity, actually. So if a company now in this new model is working remotely, so its employees are working from home, but it also has its business relationship with its customers, its suppliers, everything is organized in a digital way. Even the production would be linked to the internet. We don't even have a printer here inside Arendt House, which is not in a way linked to the internet. And so there is this risk of cybersecurity. And for that, companies must be prepared, must be aware of this risk. So my recommendation would be to start with training the staff, and that is not only the normal staff, but also the board level and C level, to raise their awareness and also to make regular maturity assessments of their IT systems. So generally, if there is a cybersecurity incident, it is due to an external malicious act. However, it is generally only becoming, so the risk really materializes with the help of employees, but which it is just due to human error. So that's why it becomes so important to raise this awareness of the staff at all levels, and then obviously internal policies have to be put in place, and it is important to really at the level of the board to take to be conscious of the fact that investments have to be made in that field.
So I don't know, Philippe, when you took this job, did you realize that you were going to have to become an IT expert?
Oh, definitely not. But I can confirm what Astrid says, that training is very important. So we see a lot of questions from employers. How can I train my employees? Where can I train them? Who pays for the training? So a lot of questions. And I think this is really money worth investing to make sure that your data is protected.
Is this the same for regulated entities?
Absolutely. And training is even mandatory for regulated entities. So I think, because in terms of cybersecurity, I think one key point is considered that awareness of the risk and knowledge of what could create risk is one of the key factors. So that is something which must be established and with a training plan, duly documented one, next to a number of other requirements. And I think to come back what Astrid said, I think these are obviously elements that are make a lot of sense for any type of business, but I would say in the regulated space you even have a mandatory layer of what you had to do on top of that. So you have to have a proper specific security policy for teleworking, in order the devices you are using and the connections you are using for teleworking. You have to have specific encryption mechanisms, you have to have two-factor authentication when employees connect to the systems. You have to have this kind of detection of abnormal type of connections. All of this must be properly logged so that you can audit what happened if there was an issue. So indeed, I think that's a key concern in the regulated space as well.
So are you saying, would I be safer as an employee actually taking my client papers home? What do you think, Astrid?
It's a funny question, because generally in internal policies you would not allow to your employees to take papers home, but also not to send professional emails to their private email address. And I think that one important element here is that if you have these internal policies which impose restrictions on your employees, you must do that in a way to get their buy-in. You really have to have your employees on board. So if you want them in the evening to read a long document while being at home, then, for example, one solution would be that you provide them a second screen for their computer at home. And so that they do not need to print it out if you do not want them to take either the paper home, or that they send it to their private email address and that they can print it out at home.
Philippe?
And I guess this is also an additional obligation for the employers, because as an employer, you have to make sure that your employees are working in a safe and healthy work environment. So you also have to make sure that your employees, when you want them to work from home, or if you allow it, you need to make sure that they are working in good conditions. So basically that, as Astrid mentioned, that they have a second screen, that they have an adequate chair, and so that their place of working remotely is a place where they can perform well their job and comply with their own obligations.
And if you had to make an estimated guess here in Luxembourg, do you think banks, if you had to score the industry out of 10 in terms of equipping their staff with the good enough IT equipment, where are we, Thierry? What would you say out of 10?
It's very difficult, I think, to give a generic answer to that, because it very much depends on the companies, their personal evolutions and their IT infrastructures. When we discuss teleworking as well, I think that a very important factor is the human capital element. We have a situation where the physical interaction between people is a key component of the human capital of a company. And the importance of this human interaction very much depends on the business, of course. Just to take two extreme examples, if you have a company providing translation services, you can perfectly imagine that each translator works independently from home, as the case may be, doing his job without having to interact on a regular basis with colleagues, because you work on your documents, and it can be reviewed by a supervisor. But once it's done, it's just over. Need for interaction is very limited. But another example is a professional services firm, like in our case, a law firm, an accounting firm, an audit firm. Teamwork, training on the job, these are key factors, and so you need some social interaction. And there is a limit to teleworking in that respect.
So from your perspective, actually, the human capital is even more important than the IT question,
yes,
really.
Yes, yes, I think so.
What do you think, Mark?
Yes, I think today what I see at least in the regulated space is that players now are quite well equipped. But I think where the real challenge was, that was actually at the start of the pandemic, where because remote working was really not something that was encouraged in the financial industry at the time. And we had from one day to another, you had hundreds and hundreds of employees. Suddenly, you had no choice but to work remotely. So I think we have come a long way. And that's a bit, going back to what we said earlier, that there was kind of a real evolution and a quick evolution, that within 1 year, we came from a very limited set of home working to something that's now very, nevertheless, established.
When I come back to what Thierry mentioned before, he talked about the human capital, human interaction, I think we should not forget that also some kind of flexibility which people are looking for now are working hours. So it's not only flexibility in terms of where do I work from, but also when do I work. And that's something which we see also in policies we are drafting for our clients, that it's very important when you have flexible working hours that you define core working hours where all of your employees are in the premises. Even if around those core hours people might have flexibility, I think it's very important that even if employees are in the premises, or even working remotely, that they work at the same time, or at least that there is an overlap so that there can be an interaction and this human capital can be valued.
Because Luxembourg was quite old-fashioned, wasn't it? I remember when I first signed my first job contract in Luxembourg and I saw the working hours were 8 a.m. until 12 a.m., two-hour lunch break, and then 2 until 6. I was coming from London and I thought, who has a two-hour lunch break? What sort of country is this? Are you saying that flexible working is now going to become the norm?
I guess we are going towards a model that you experienced already in the UK. There is some additional flexibility, and you also see that due to the traffic situation in Luxembourg, we need this flexibility. Mm-hmm. If everyone is driving into Luxembourg City at 8 a.m. in the morning, it will not be possible. In a few months, the traffic situation will be too difficult. So it's important that people have this flexibility. Maybe you start your working day from home, you work 1 or 2 hours, and then you drive into the office. But there again, we have some restrictions from a tax perspective, that even if you start your working day and you spend the rest of the day in the office, you might face restrictions. But maybe Thierry can detail this.
No, you're right. So you have a very limited number of days which will be allowed going forward for these cross-border workers to work in their home country without becoming taxable in this country. And if you have partial days that are worked at home, these will be counted as full days and for the 19 or 34 days limit. So it's going to have a huge impact.
But I agree also to this kind of core working hours. I think that there's a limit to flexibility, at least in the regulated space, because the regulator expects the key functions nevertheless to be there and working at the same time, because you cannot have a situation where, let's say, the manager of one department is working in the morning, the compliance officer is only there in the afternoon, and kind of these key functions can no longer kind of work together in a useful manner. So I think the flexibility always has its limits, that the entity can have less function in an efficient and correct manner. So,
although, Mark, I must say, I received a letter from the CSSF the other day, and the email was sent to me on Sunday. So even they're working on Sunday. Amazing. Do you think, is working on Sunday going to become... who here works on a Sunday from time to time? Philippe, do you work on a Sunday?
Well, I must admit that I'm a fan of flexible working hours. So I guess you have two different approaches. Either you say work is done in the premises during working hours and it remains there. When I go home, that's my private life and I don't want professional life to interfere with that. Or you say, I want flexibility, but then you have to accept as well that you need to be flexible. You need maybe to work on weekends or longer hours, but I guess that's the counterpart of flexibility that you have. And that's something that we see when we talk to clients, that they say some employees are just not prepared for working in a more flexible fashion, mm-hmm. because they count their working hours by the minute, and that's not possible. When you're working in a flexible work environment, you need to show some flexibility, mm-hmm. and that goes into two directions. It's not a one direction situation.
Astrid, are you a fan of this flexibility?
Yes, I'm certainly a fan of that, especially I have young kids, so it is great if I can go home in the evening, have dinner with them and then reconnect if I want or need. And I see that also with the members of my team, they are happy to be flexible. I mean, they do not need to inform me if they work later in the evening. And obviously, then they also do not need to inform me when they come a little bit later in the morning. And here comes again the element of trust.
Yeah, I think also in this respect, leaving aside the regulatory requirements, there is a strong focus on the necessity to allow interaction, even on a remote basis, and teamwork to function in a teleworking dimension. Because just to take a rough example, if you expect colleagues to be available during the same time slots, it means that you cannot have a colleague during a footing without giving a proper notice in the middle of the afternoon, because these are normal working hours. So flexible working time needs to take these elements into account and to make sure that you always leave the possibility for a teamwork to be performed in a remote working environment.
I mean, when we look back at this time, how are we going to judge whether what system is best?
Practice will tell us, I would say. I think we are, as mentioned before, we have this rather old-fashioned way of how we work, or at least we used to have it until the pandemic. And so now things have been shifting quite rapidly. And I guess we need some time to change our mindset. We see some younger companies, startups, which already started with this mindset, but maybe in more established companies, it will take a little bit more time. But we see definitely that there is an evolution which is coming its way, but everyone needs to adapt oneself to this new situation.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I think the situation created by the pandemic has been kind of a way to test that in a very large scale and very suddenly. And I think indeed, and that's what we are also here thinking about, is this will remain to a certain extent, this way of working. And that's why we are kind of considering this new normal. So it's not something only that is existing during this pandemic, but large parts of this will stay. And it's very important to look at this from all the relevant perspectives to make sure that these models work in a sound manner.
Mm. And I think it's also a very personal question for each and every one of us, because that also leads us to the question of the right to disconnect. Because if you do not make the difference between your workplace and your home, because you work a lot at home, then where is actually the time where you completely disconnect from your work? And I think it is very important to take holidays from time to time, and also to disconnect at least once in a week.
Absolutely. Now, I'd just like to come back to digital issues for a second. I know the topic of electronic signatures is quite a hot one. So am I right in thinking that basically now all electronic signatures have the same value as something handwritten?
That is not correct. You are not right in thinking that. So we have, there is a European regulation, so which directly applies in all EU member states, which categorizes electronic signatures in three different types. So we have simple electronic signatures, advanced electronic signatures, and qualified electronic signatures. And from the as regards to probative value, it's only the qualified electronic signature which has the same value than a handwritten signature. So we see with our clients that they are nonetheless reluctant to use qualified electronic signatures. So they take certain risks in that respect, but it is because qualified electronic signatures are quite cumbersome and also expensive. And so our general recommendation is to make an analysis on a case-by-case basis, and depending on actually the impact of the document, so the risk which is related to it. So if we have a client in the fund industry which gets the signature of an investor on a commitment letter to invest in the fund of several millions, several hundred millions, then obviously my recommendation is to go on or to accept only a qualified electronic signature. Now, if you have board minutes, for example, which is only a document which is documenting a decision which was taken by a corporate body, there obviously you could use an advanced electronic signature or even a simple electronic signature. So those are the questions which our clients raise. And then for me, the electronic signature is, however, a very important, a key element actually in a global digitalization process of companies and to become paperless. And it goes with also an electronic archiving of their documents. And then maybe we can mention that there is an additional tool which is on its way, an additional tool for this digitalization process, which is the e-billing. So there will be an obligation for companies who are participating in public procurement to submit their invoices electronically, so in a structured way that is based on European standard, which may then be processed and paid electronically and automatically. So this will be become, and I assume that it will over time become generalized and used by the majority of the companies.
Yes, and maybe just to quickly mention two very interesting developments in the regulated sphere is that you have obviously a number of investor protection rules in let's say financial regulation. And what we see, for instance, and it has been introduced by the so-called MiFID quick fix directive, is that now regulators accept that investors and clients and consumers can be informed via electronic communications as opposed to paper-based communication. So for instance, in MiFID investment services like investment advice, portfolio management, kind of execution of orders on financial instruments, the kind of by default now banks can inform clients about risks, about costs, about things like that electronically, although beforehand it was very, very much paper focused. That's one important point, and the other extremely interesting development is kind of in the onboarding area and the AML area, because when you onboard a new client, of course you need to identify the client, you need to make sure that it is the person is who the person claims to be. And here we're also seeing all of these possibilities to use video identification, to use digital ID, to use all of these type of elements to facilitate the non-face-to-face onboarding. These have also taken kind of a real lifting off and are used more and more, and the regulators have given interesting guidance on, you know, what are the kind of mitigation measures to kind of address the risks that have been brought on by these more kind of distance relationships.
It feels like this is one area where the fintech sector is sort of leading the way and then traditional banks are catching up. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even from an HR perspective, you see that more and more communication is also done electronically, whereas before everyone liked you to have everything in paper form, wet ink signatures. And so we have an increase in requests regarding the validity of enforcing basically documents upon employees, which are just circulated electronically. Mm-hmm. And that's where Astrid and I very often work together to get the answer to those questions and to know, is it enforceable to send just a document electronically to the employee? And to run practical examples, for example, the homeworking policies, which are now implemented post-crisis, where the question is, do we have to distribute it in paper form to all employees, or can we just publish it, for example, on our intranet and ask the employees to click and accept?
I mean, it feels common sense that we can use digital tools for that sort of communication, wouldn't you say?
Yes, it certainly is. Now, you always have the burden of proof to evidence that the person was in a situation to get knowledge of it, and how you can evidence that the information has reached the relevant person. So,
yeah, but I agree. I think it's kind of important because, you know, listening to a lot of marketing discussions, etc., around these are valid signatures, etc., I think it's nevertheless quite important to not avoid this legal analysis and really look at, you know, what are you really looking at? Because as Astrid said, the type of signature can have very fundamental impacts on its validity. And I think if you hear about talk and kind of also choosing the right provider, because you could have, for instance, what we have seen is that a certain specific type of signature is offered by kind of leading providers from the US, but they have European entity and others. And even if the European entity can give you the kind of right valid signature, a lot of providers did not really pay attention and, for example, used the US version of the tool, mm-hmm. and not realizing that they have this alternative that gives them the legal certainty. So I think it's nevertheless important to look at it a bit more closely. Mm-hmm.
Now, Thierry, you talked a little bit earlier on about where we work will have an increasing impact on potential our tax liabilities. But let's just say I was a cross-border worker myself. I'm working there at home in France. Are there potential risks if I end up working there more than I possibly predicted to?
Oh, yes. Yes, there are risks for the employee becoming taxable for a higher amount of taxes at the end of the day, but there are risks for the employer as well. And I think that going forward, a strict observance and monitoring of these thresholds will be the new normal from the employer's perspective. So exceeding these thresholds could entail significant compliance costs and risks. And I think that also those who believe that they should not worry too much about these taxation rules and that the actual place they work from will go unnoticed could face difficult times. Because obviously also the tax authorities increasingly use information technology and big data during their tax audits. And as I was saying before, that's easy money for tax authorities to collect, and the stakes are quite significant, and employers should be prepared and have the right mindset in that respect as well.
And Philippe, from an employment law perspective, if I end up working all my time in France when officially I'm doing a Luxembourg job, is that a risk from your perspective?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you have the tax risk, you have the social security risk that you need to affiliate your employee with foreign social security. And you have an additional risk, which is that foreign employment laws could become applicable. And in Luxembourg, we have a rather flexible labor code and employment laws and regulations. So as an employer, you could have the surprise that you are facing a very different set of laws if your employee is working in majority or on a full-time basis from outside Luxembourg. And an additional risk are also work-related accidents. So you need to know where your employees are at what moment in time. Because if an employee works from abroad without this being noticed by the employer and the employee has an accident, for example, you might also face questions from the authorities here in Luxembourg, whether this is or qualifies as a work-related accident or whether it is a private accident. So a lot of questions might arise in that moment.
Yeah, and I think geography is also key, I would say, in the regulated space, because here you have really a very strong expectation from the regulator that the kind of decision taking regarding the regulated business remains in Luxembourg. So that's this concept of regulatory substance, and you have to have always sufficient personnel in terms of quality and quantity in Luxembourg. So for instance, on site, you will always need one of the senior managers. So we cannot have the whole executive committee around the pool in Spain taking decisions for banks. So that's really one of, at least one must be in the office. The key functions must be sufficiently represented in the office, etc. So for regulated entities, there's clearly this idea that the key decision taking must remain in Luxembourg. And then also, I think there's a real also distinction depending on function. So some functions, it's less of an issue if they work remotely. Some, their presence is just necessary regarding, for instance, a number of front office functions or IT, key IT maintenance and administration functions, trading, business. And so potentially for some employees, that may mean that they can do some things remotely, you know, review their emails, do trainings, do a number of things, but not necessarily the core function of their job. So you really, this kind of geography is also an important consideration for regulated entities.
And am I right in thinking that board members need to be especially cautious here? I mean, for example, let's say I'm a board member, once again in France, two friends come over, they're also board members. It sounds like we could accidentally have a board meeting in France. That can't be good, can it, Thierry?
No, you're absolutely right, Jim. And that's, I would say, another element of tax risk, which is sometimes overlooked. And it's related to the risk of recognition of a permanent establishment. In a situation where tax authorities in a certain country can consider that the home of the employee is put at the disposal of the employer, and put at the disposal is a tax word. In these situations, so the tax authorities can consider that the Luxembourg employer has a permanent establishment in the foreign country due to the home working situation of the cross border employee. That is definitely a very unhappy situation, because that will lead to significant tax costs and compliance issues for the employer, that will mean increased taxes and quite severe sanctions for undisclosed permanent establishments. The example you were giving is a good example. So if you have senior executives of a company performing management functions in their home, that's not a good situation. For certain people also having sales functions, if they use their home to invite clients, that's also a very bad situation. So these situations should be certainly monitored in a special manner. Another point I wanted to make also, quite strangely, but that's how tax rules are built. You have more favorable tax rules applying when you have Lux resident employees working abroad, because in that situation you don't have the 19 or 34 days limit that applies. You will generally be able to work in these countries. The example of working near the pool in Spain for a Luxembourg resident employee, that is something that is manageable to a certain extent. You will, of course, make sure that you don't create a Luxembourg employer risk in Spain to the recognition of a Spanish permanent establishment, but you don't have to monitor the number of days in the same manner, quite strangely enough.
Of course, it makes me wonder how many people in this pandemic have been working in Spain and actually just not told anyone. But that's more of a human resource issue, I suspect.
Yes, and I must say that my Spanish tax colleagues consider that this could fuel the appetite of the Spanish tax authorities and say, well, once we will be back to new normal, let's monitor that and try to see if we can raise some taxes.
As we move towards the end of this Aren't We Live, I'd like to go round our panel and ask for you one specific piece of advice that you'd like to give to your clients.
Mark. I would say prepare for the new normal and don't miss an angle. We have seen there are tax, labor, data protection, regulatory, electricity. So it's multifaceted, and I would say prepare for it and don't miss an aspect.
Philippe.
Well, I guess my piece of advice is to say that the working place is evolving, so you need to be agile, but anticipate. Verify your legal setup ahead. Make sure you have a robust, flexible working policy, because there will be no way around flexibility. So if you want to attract and have your talents remaining in the company, you need to offer this flexibility, but you have to take into account all the angles that Mark mentioned before as well.
Astrid.
My piece of advice to the audience would be to take a step back and to analyze what was implemented a bit in a rush in terms of digitalization at the beginning of the pandemic, to make a legal analysis as well, and to take remediation actions where necessary, and then to continue investing in digitalization, but also without forgetting the security of information.
And Thierry.
So for those employers, and I think that's a majority of them, were not necessarily prepared, the reintroduction of the standard tax rules after the pandemic will mean that they will have to assess their current situation, adopt quick fixes, secure the relevant position, and make sure they monitor the compliance with their working policy on a long-term basis.
Thank you very much. This has been Aren't We Live number 5, the new normal in 2022, evolution or revolution. This is Jim Kent. Look forward to you tuning in to the next podcast.